From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard, and joining me on the show this week are a couple of folks who've been on the show many times, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Tim Mack, senior congressional correspondent for The Daily Beast. And here are the issues. Republican presidential candidates held their final debate before voting actually begins in Iowa on February 1st, as New York businessman Donald Trump solidified his lead in polls and is now seen as a possible winner of the Republican race and the Republican presidential nomination. In Washington, President Obama delivered his last State of the Union address as he entered his eighth and final year in the White House. Iran released 10 American sailors seized in the Persian Gulf and released videos of them in captivity for what appeared to be propaganda purposes. And Islamic State, or ISIS, claimed credit for a bombing and gun attack in Indonesia that left 7 dead, including 5 of the attackers, while Turkey bombed Islamic State targets in Syria after a suicide bombing in Istanbul. Tom, you've covered maybe even one more presidential campaign than I have, but I think something has happened and was reflected in the Republican presidential debate that we didn't really see before. It was not that we weren't paying enormous attention to Donald Trump and his presidential race, but I think it was assumed by most of us that Trump is interesting, you know, and he's going to win some delegates to the convention and maybe can win some primaries, but he really can't win the Republican presidential nomination. I think that's changed now. I think he seemed to be in total command of himself in that Republican presidential debate. His poll numbers are actually rising a little bit. In any case, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think I agree with you, Fred. I thought that Trump would have self-destructed a long time ago. I've never seen a politician running for president who has made so many mistakes by contemporary standards. He insults people. He's quite a performer. He's quite an act, but he's a very smart politician. And lesser politicians and lesser personalities would have been gone long ago, and yet he's thriving. And I think he has skillfully tapped into the anger in a large segment of the American voter, namely the aging, white, middle class, some would say lower middle class, white voters, mainly male, who feel disenfranchised, who feel left out from the way the country is going. And he's done a very good job of that. His polls go up.
Yeah.
I think he's probably going to win New Hampshire handily, and he is neck and neck with Senator Ted Cruz in Iowa. And some say that he may well win in Iowa. We'll have to see what the next set of polls say. But I think I agree with you. I think the notion of Trump winning the nomination is real at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Tim, here's what Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon wrote after the debate in Charleston, South Carolina, among the Republican candidates. He said, the Fox Business debate made clear that the Republican primary is Donald Trump's race to lose.
Yeah, I think
that going too far?
A couple points. I think that if you go to these places like in western Iowa, you talk to some of these people and you ask them, why would Trump be your guy? Why is that interesting to you? What appeals to you about him despite his many gaffes? And they say, well, you know, if you look at my income for the last decade, it's been stagnant. America might be improving. The economy might be improving. The president might be saying that things are getting better, but it's not getting better for me. And I'm so frustrated looking at what's happening in Washington, D.C., that I'm willing to try something else. And it might be Donald Trump, and he might be bombastic, and he might insult people, and he might be totally different from what we see normally. I'm willing to give it a shot. So that's one point. Another point is not only is Donald Trump doing well in Iowa and New Hampshire, if you look to the next state, if you look to South Carolina, that's actually a stronger state for him in terms of organization, in terms of actual support than Iowa or New Hampshire.
Yeah, that's the third event comes 2 weeks. Let's see. We have Iowa February 1st, New Hampshire February 9th, South Carolina. It's on a Saturday, but anyway, it's about 10 or 12 days later.
So in the first three contests, you could expect Donald Trump to take two or maybe even three of those contests. So it really looks like he's dominating the race in a way that if any other candidate were dominating it, we would have called the race almost over. And thirdly, I think what you're seeing in Washington, D.C. is you talk to a lot of people who are have been, over the last half year, utterly appalled by the idea of a Donald Trump candidacy, and they are starting to slowly come to terms with the idea that it could happen. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to make plans for what they could do to mollify and to shave off some of these rough edges of Donald Trump if and when mm-hmm. he becomes the Republican nominee.
You know, in the presidential debate, there was an argument between Trump and Ted Cruz, his strongest rival at the moment. Ted Cruz is a Republican senator from the state of Texas, very conservative. And Trump argues that since Cruz was born in Canada, his mother was an American, since he was born in Canada, that with an American mother, he's an American citizen, but that doesn't make him a natural-born citizen and thus eligible to be president. It sounds like a legal point, which it is. And Trump hammered that home and said, well, Democrats, if you're the nominee, they'll sue and try to disqualify you.
Well, and I think that Trump skillfully made that point. I think his objective, I agree with you, Fred, I'm basically stealing one of your thoughts.
That's okay.
I agree with you completely. I think Trump's main focus was to inject the element of uncertainty about all of this, that there will be a legal challenge. And the last thing the party's nominee wants heading into the fall is a legal challenge, which might still be up in the air, injecting uncertainty. I think that Cruz is probably okay on the law, but when people go into the voting booth, it's not necessarily the law they're thinking about. So I think Trump did that very well. I think he set out to do that, and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Cruz is a great debater, and so I think he threw Trump off at one point when he was talking about since Trump's mother was Scottish, then maybe mm-hmm. Trump is not qualified. And
yeah.
I don't think Trump was prepared for that. But still, I think Trump got the better of that exchange, even though atmospherically it looked like Cruz
yeah.
was better.
Yeah, Trump did make the point that he was born in the U.S., unlike Ted Cruz. Well, this legal point will be debated just because Trump has made such a big issue on it. If Trump wins in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, as you were suggesting, is possible, and I agree with you, Tim, the race is over, isn't it?
Well, I think that there will be a lot of people dropping out quite quickly after New Hampshire. You'll see some people who had poor results in the next month dropping out. I mean, it has been a very large field of candidates, to unusually large, so much so that every debate we have to have a main debate and a undercard debate of the candidates who haven't reached a threshold of 3 or 4 or 5%.
When we have actual voting, the race, there will be winnowing, so-called. It will shrink. There'll be fewer candidates coming out of New Hampshire, maybe just 2 or 3. So
I don't think it's over. You still need to win a lot more delegates, but it certainly is, I think, as you make the point, and Continetti makes the point, it is Donald Trump's race to lose at that point.
All right, let's take a short break. We'll be right back with more Issues in the News.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Welcome back to Issues in the News on VOA. I'm Fred Barnes with Tim Mack and Tom DeFrank. I want to touch on one more thing about the Republican presidential race, and in particular is Jeb Bush, the brother of a president and the son of a president. You know, here we have the final debate before Iowa, and Jeb just didn't seem to be a big factor in that debate. I mean, he was a stronger presence than he might have been earlier, but he didn't seem to be the part of the fundamental debate, which involved Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump.
Basically, it was Cruz and Trump. Rubio got a little bit of what we in the media call FaceTime. He got some questions. Mm-hmm. He did reasonably well, but he came across as a not a very close third in terms of action mm-hmm. to Cruz and Trump.
Jeb Bush?
I think Jeb was better. He's been getting better. He is the voice of reason, the voice of calm. And I think Jeb would probably make a pretty good president, but, I mean, his message is not resonating with Republicans. Part of it is his candidacy has been complicated by the fact that he is the brother of a not totally popular president, mm-hmm. But the party seems to be in a mood, as Tim says, of trying something else. Mm-hmm. And Jeb, I think, is not catching on. I mean, I think everybody thought he was going to win New Hampshire going away. He'll be lucky to be fourth. Mm-hmm. Lucky to be fourth. Mm-hmm. And so technically he was better, but he's not making any inroads.
Tim?
Yeah. Jeb sounded nervous on the debate stage. Didn't seem like he really belonged up there with those other heavyweights, you know, that that although he has all this experience in government, he is not a slick campaigner. And and his campaign has really fallen apart because of various small missteps on the camp trail, and his not being able to project confidence in speech. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we saw again on the debate stage. Although I will note that even as I was coming over to record this program, is that he's just netted a critical endorsement in South Carolina. Senator Lindsey Graham is going to be endorsing him today. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if it's over for Jeb.
Mm-hmm.
He still has a very, very loyal base of support. Now, that's not very large, but he can hang on for some months to come and has the money to do so.
I agree with that. Okay, President Obama. His last State of the Union address to Congress, where you're supposed to talk about the State of the Union, and he did. He had very kind words to say about his own presidency. But one of the things that he said, one of his regrets was that the raw, polarized feelings between Republicans and Democrats is worse than ever, even though he took no blame for it, even though I think he deserves some. And even though that is what was the fundamental thing about his campaign originally in 2008, that he knew how to change Washington and turn it into a different town where people could work together in a bipartisan way and so on. And whether he knew he was doing this or not, Tom, he was admitting that he failed entirely in that. And I think he deserves some of the blame.
Well, I mean, he is the second president in a row who has been a polarizing president. Mm-hmm. I remember George W. Bush came into office saying, I'm a uniter, not a divider. It didn't work out that way. And Obama, when he was campaigning in 2008, said, oh, I'm the real uniter, not a divider. I can, as you said, I can bring people together. I can transform the system. That didn't work out either. Some would argue that if Hillary Clinton is the next president, and one might also argue that if Donald Trump is the next president, you might have a third president in a row who is a divider, not a uniter, or, to be charitable, a polarizer. But I think Obama at one point came close to basically taking a little bit of blame, but then he walked that back. I thought his speech was on one level was appealing because, one, it wasn't as long as many of these. It was an hour and 1 minute, and he didn't do the laundry list of all the things he wants to have accomplished, mainly because he knows they're not going to be accomplished in the next 10 months. But he was wistful. But he said at the end, usually presidents come and say the State of the Union is strong or the State of the Union is really messed up. He waited till the end to do that. That was his punchline. Mm-hmm. The State of the Union is still strong. I think what Obama was trying to do is set the table for the Democrat. He was basically trying to say all the Republicans have to offer is gloom and doom and negative, and they're talking down America. It's really interesting because he kept talking about what an exceptional place America is. It's respected around the world, and that's totally opposite from what the Republicans and many of his critics are saying is the reality.
Indeed. What about the State of the Union? I've watched so many of those going back to the first one you've seen and earlier, and the first one I actually watched and had to write about was in 1975, well before you were born, Tim. Anyway, what about it?
Well, I want to defer a little bit to your wisdom and experience here.
But, not wisdom, experience, yes. Wisdom, no.
I think that the notable thing from the State of the Union was the sense of optimism that the president wanted to project, even though it goes in contrast to so many, I guess, basic realities that are happening in America, and also the perception of much of the Republican base. The idea that America's economy is better now than ever before. The idea that America's reputation abroad is better now than ever before, and that our enemies are growing weaker and America is growing stronger. That's just not the way. We have to ask, well, what is the source really of this polarization? It's that there are two Americas, and they see things entirely differently. It's that the people who support Barack Obama do believe that things are getting better, and for many of them, it is. And they do believe that the world sees America better today than it did 8 or 10 years ago. And from their perspective, they do. Republicans see it utterly differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that the polarization that we're seeing that extends back to President George W. Bush is in large part because a portion of America is being left behind, is looking at these stagnant incomes and doesn't quite see that they're being pulled along with the rest of America.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom, just for the record, what was the first State of the Union address that you covered?
It was Richard Nixon in 1971.
Jay, you are old.
Getting older by the day.
Obviously, you were a young reporter then. Well, look, I'm going to take a break. We have a couple more subjects to cover. But anyway, we'll be right back with more Issues in the News.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Welcome back. I'm Fred Barnes with Tom DeFrank and Tim Mack. I'm not going to discuss with Tom all the State of the Union addresses that he's had to sit through. But in any case, let's talk about these 10 American sailors who were seized in the Persian Gulf by the Iranian military. And the way it's been, the reaction, a very polarized reaction in the U.S., Tim and Tom, and that is conservatives and Republicans think that there was a tremendous humiliation for Americans, particularly after these videos are released showing the American soldiers kneeling and with their hands behind their head and so on. And one of them was being interviewed and sounding like he was apologizing and so on. Tom, what about it?
Well, I will go back to the debate very quickly. Ted Cruz is a very skillful debater, got the first question, and his answer had nothing to do with the question. He launched this monologue about the humiliation, mm-hmm. and then when he becomes president of the United States, no American military personnel will ever be humiliated with being on their knees. I just asked myself, how would he manage to do that once they had been captured? But anyway, you're right. I think it would have been worse for President Obama had the Iranians held on to the sailors for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know for a fact the White House was very upset about the timing of this, but of course the comeback from the White House is our diplomacy and our new relationship with Iran because of the deal was able to defuse this. Then the sailors were back within 24 hours. I mean, if the sailors were still in Iranian hands when this debate went off, it would have really been a problem. And I think it was wise for Obama, President Obama, not to mention this in his State of the Union. But basically, geopoliticians are now saying, well, this was a good example of the fact the moderates had the upper hand because the Republican guards, the military hardliners, would have probably argued, let's hold them and milk this for even more propaganda value. But that didn't happen. So I guess it depends on whether you like President Obama and his foreign policy or you don't.
Well, you're certainly right. The Republicans would have made a lot more out of it if they were still in captivity at the time of the debate. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Republicans tried to make the point that, hey, you know, I was talking to Congressman Duncan Hunter. He's a congressman from California and a Republican, and he was saying that, look, the president's apologetic foreign policy is now filtered down to the level of sailors, that this is the manifestation of the apologies the president has made all over the world. You may agree with that or you may not, but the fact is that these sailors were promptly returned. And so it's hard to make a greater point about how the president isn't able to secure the safety of military service members when they were returned so promptly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other problem is that nobody is denying that these two small riverine coastal vessels, very small, had for some reason gone into Iranian territorial waters. It's not like the Iranians came out into international seas and grabbed them and pulled them into port. Now, why they were off course, what they were doing that far away from their mothership, you can be sure the Navy will be investigating this for quite a long time. But it could have been a much bigger deal than it was, but it's a great talking point for Republicans and critics of the president, that's for sure.
Okay, final issue, and that's Islamic State, ISIS, whatever we want to call it, ISIL, as the president does. A suicide bombing in Turkey in Istanbul, and then another bombing in Jakarta, Indonesia. My reaction to that is ISIS is certainly spreading its wings even more than we thought. We know about it. They're active in Libya and other places in the Middle East or close to it. What about it, Tom?
Well, there's no doubt that if you count the bombings in Paris, the killings in San Bernardino, California, plus these latest two, they have a breadth that is frankly very troubling to American and Western intelligence. The notion of President Obama always talks about the goal is to degrade and ultimately destroy ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call them, Daesh, whatever. But they are persistent and they are expanding. And I know that at the Pentagon, you will be told that we have rolled them back. We've killed a lot of their leaders. We've killed a lot of their second tier professionals.
And, all of which is true.
It is quite true. And they don't control as much territory as they used to do. But they're still there, and they're still capable of global mayhem.
You know, one of the points that the president made in his State of the Union address, Tim, was that ISIS, I think it was there anyway, ISIS is not an existential threat to the United States. What about?
Well, the president is right to try to say that, that ISIS is not going to be able to destroy the United States. The country will not fall apart because of this threat. But what that discounts is the nature of the threat itself, is that it can strike anywhere, anytime, that it's not dependent on territorial control. You see these attacks all across the world from California to Jakarta, and you realize that the nature of the threat is different than that of, say, the Cold War or even a conventional civil war like we're seeing in Syria right now, right? That this is not a matter of controlling territory per se. This is a matter of controlling minds and ideology. And when you look at what the United States has actually done to combat the ideology, you'll find that there's not a lot being done that's persuasive to ISIS fighters or people who might be interested in joining ISIS. There's a lot of bombs, there's a lot of killing, but not a lot to actually recognize the true nature of the threat, which is that ISIS is created and is fed by an ideology that attracts young, largely male fighters into their population.
Does the president underestimate ISIS, Tom?
Well, he did for a while. I remember earlier in the year he referred to ISIS as the JV, the junior varsity, meaning the kind of the second, in the sports vernacular, the second team, not the first team. But I think he understands that was underestimating him. I don't think he underestimates him anymore, but it's he understands exactly what the threat is now, that's for sure.
Underestimated, Tim?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's not so much a matter of estimating. I think the JV point is a good point. Is not properly understanding the nature of the threat. Is that you can bomb these people, you can kill thousands and thousands of their fighters, and they will replace them because it's not a matter of kinetic energy that's going to destroy
them. The phrase in the Vietnam War was hearts and minds. You get the feeling that ISIS, for the moment, is still winning more hearts and minds than is good for Democrats and Western nations and peaceful nations. They seem to be winning the propaganda war within Islam.
That's all the time we have. Joining us today were Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Tim Mack, senior congressional correspondent for the Daily Beast and someone who's also covering the presidential race. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Jackson Witt and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.